The World Economic Forum, which takes place each January in Davos, Switzerland, brings a lot of CEOs and heads of state to a tiny town in the Swiss Alps. You may have heard that President Trump came this year. It's the kind of place where you can be online to the bathroom and meet a former ambassador. And if you just look at the titles of the panels, it's a pretty high-minded scene, all about cooperation, making the world a better place. I went to a panel called The Weaponization of Culture with a Swedish minister and Yo-Yo Ma. There was another panel called We Need to Talk About Privilege. I couldn't get a ticket to that. But there is a whole other Davos. Because when these CEOs and billionaires and diplomats go out of the high-security conference center dome and down to their private parties and events in hotels shaped like wedding cakes, they pass by a street called the Promenade. Mercedes-Benz, Mercedes-Benz, Volkswagen. And down here at the Promenade, the scene is very different. You have countries that have rented out storefronts, trying to lure in the influential and powerful attendees.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you likewise. Your
name? My first stop is India House.
A lot of people who told us that they've come specifically to the lunch just to eat the food. So it's been also a soft power kind of sorts.
Okay, so they come for the food, but they learn about the investment.
It's mutually beneficial in both ways, though.
This is Aditya Nagarajan. He points to a series of giant number ones printed on the wall.
It's the number one attractive investment destination globally. We're number one on Global Retail Development Index. So all these panels over here are a reflection about how India means business.
India means business. In fact, that's written on the door.
Correct.
But just pop a few doors down to a Timberland shop turned into Ukraine House. There, instead of samosas and dried ginger, they're serving...
Borscht. Borscht is Ukraine, by the way. Don't trust Hollywood.
Andrei Koladyuk has got his list of the things that Ukraine is number one in.
The Ukraine is number one in Europe, but the quantity of certified IT specialists.
Wait, number one in Europe in the quantity of certified IT specialists?
That's right.
What about India, though? They have more IT specialists.
Okay. If you want to go cheap, you go for India, because you're going to pay twice more for Ukrainian programmers. Why? Because you will get the quality.
Stepping out of Ukraine House, I go to the Indonesian pavilion for some chicken soto soup and talk about Jakarta startups. And by this point, I've realized two things about Davos. First, you never have to pay for food. Second, although the theme, at least in the billionaire bubble, is about saving the world, what it really feels like down on the street is Epcot Center for billionaires. You know, countries wooing investors by picking their favorite stats. But then something odd happens. I walk into the spot that Saudi Arabia has rented out. It's usually a Benetton clothing store. Now it's draped in green, the color of the Saudi flag. And at first it seems like the exact same song and dance. There's cardamom coffee being served in the corner and a jumbo TV screen with all of Saudi Arabia's number ones.
Registering properties in Saudi Arabia is extremely affordable. It's actually zero cost. That attracts a lot of investment.
You're number one in that.
Exactly.
Number one in access to electricity.
Exactly.
Number one in tax payments.
Exactly.
But then this funny thing happens. This guy who's pitching me this list, his name's Hussamuddin Al-Madani, he clicks a button on the jumbo screen.
So let's look at the bottom line.
Let's do it.
Great.
And
so,
what pops up are Saudi Arabia's worst stats.
CO2 emissions is something that we are very concerned about, and so this is something on our watch list. Diabetes prevalence, it's something also.
The rankings here, they're what Saudi Arabia gets most criticized for, like having so few women in the workforce, having lots of migrants with few rights.
There are things that we're not doing well, and there are things that we are doing well.
While every other country on this Davos street is showcasing their number one stats, their best rankings, Saudi Arabia has come to Davos with a different plan. They've got a database of 700 indicators, and any country can look up where they rank.
Yeah, there is nothing to hide. This is public data. We are not shy about it.
Hello and welcome to Planet Money. I'm Gregory Warner. Today on the show, what is Saudi Arabia's endgame? And why asking that question actually led me on a totally different quest. Back up the mountain to figure out what happens when we see the world in ranks and ratings, not just here on the Swiss Alps, but everywhere.
Support for Planet Money and the following message come from TaxAct.
Tax season is here, and if you've got questions, like if you're taking all the right deductions, TaxAct has you covered. With their Deduction Maximizer, designed with freelancers and the self-employed in mind, and the 100K accuracy guarantee, you can feel confident you're maximizing your deductions and your refund. So get the most out of tax season by visiting taxact.com/planetmoney to get 25% off federal and state filing. TaxAct.
Hassam Al-Madani, the guy I met from Saudi Arabia, he's 38 years old, he went to Harvard, and he's a self-described data obsessive.
Fitbit is an example, so I'm obsessed with those 10,000 steps, even though my weight doesn't show.
He tracks his steps, he tracks his sleep.
When I sleep, I look at how many hours I slept, and if it is a certain number of hours, then I feel good.
He tracks the ratings of the beaches and restaurants he visits on vacation with his family. He says he can't help it.
Look, this generation loves data and loves technology.
In this generation is also the 32-year-old crown prince of Saudi Arabia, Mohammed bin Salman. And this story really starts when that prince was first appointed in 2015, and he called Hassam into the palace.
I remember that day when I was called in, and I do my interview at 2 a.m. with His Royal Highness, which was a bit, and I wasn't prepared.
When Hassam was called in for this 2 a.m. meeting, he'd already spent years working for Aramco, the Saudi oil company, and his big job was tracking performance and efficiency. Now the prince told him to build a similar performance tracking center for the entire country.
He wanted to know how the country is doing accurately and timely. And second, he wanted to know how we are doing on the global map. How are we doing in the global indicators?
How are we ranking?
How are we ranking?
So the Saudis built a control room.
I'll say the name in Arabic and then I'll say it in English. We say it Qumrat Ada, which means the cockpit.
And can you just describe that room for me? Is it a bunch of TV screens?
It's actually, it looks like NASA. It's.
Hassam showed me pictures of the cockpit. It totally looks like Ground Control Houston, except instead of tracking rockets and satellites, they're tracking unemployment numbers and home ownership, and something the Saudis used to call the Citizen Satisfaction Index. Citizen Satisfaction Index. That's what it used to be called, now it's called?
Beneficiary satisfaction. So investors, residents, citizens, this is something that is phenomenal and historical.
Of course, other countries do have a way to gauge their satisfaction index. It's called an election. It's not perfect, of course, but at least it is one way we have that voters can rate the job the government is doing. Saudi Arabia is not a democracy. It's ruled by one royal family, and they're accountable to no one but themselves. And so they've designed an app.
We are launching an app that allows any citizen or investor to immediately on the spot rate the government service that they received, and the feedback comes immediately to our reporting cycle.
It goes right to the cockpit.
It goes to the cockpit, and also it goes to the ministers themselves.
The crown prince who hired Hassam for this job, he's got big plans to diversify the economy, make it less dependent on oil. And to pay for these schemes, he plans to float an IPO in the largest oil company in the world, Hassam's former employer, Aramco. So for the first time, foreign investors will be able to buy stock in that company. That means that Saudi Arabia has gone from being a country that didn't have to care what people thought of it to suddenly seeking favor with lots of foreign investors in foreign countries.
Saudi Arabia is open. We're open for business. We're open for partnerships. We're open for learning. And we cannot embark on our transformation without being truly humble and interested to learn from others.
Which actually brings us to why Saudi Arabia has shown up at Davos, why they've rented out this Benetton and presented this data to the global elite. What Hassam says is that he's going to be meeting with business tycoons and global leaders to basically ask everyone the same thing.
We're telling now the people in Davos, tell us how we can read this data differently. Are those the right indicators that talk of today's complex problems in the globe?
With all of these indicators and rankings out there, what should Saudi Arabia focus on? What is actually the most relevant?
Do you have a question?
I would like you to be more clear about what relevant means.
Let's find out.
So I said goodbye to Hassam, made plans with him to check back in at the end of the conference on Friday, find out what he'd learned. And as I walked back out of the sliding glass doors onto the slushy sidewalk, I was struck by the odd predicament that Saudi Arabia and really lots of countries seem to find themselves in, where on the one hand, a country's rankings can be really important in terms of investment. Disney Corporation, for example, reportedly uses one index from the World Bank, the World Governance Index, to to help it decide which countries to put its factories in. But those same countries, they can have very little say on what gets ranked or how.
Olivier, thanks to meet you.
I started talking about this with folks I was meeting on the promenade here at Davos.
But over here, I just heard, is the use of data...
That's how I met Sandra Rodriguez. She's a sociologist and a fellow at MIT who's actually been thinking a lot about this very question.
Who's making the calls? Because ranking also means who gets to choose what are you ranking? What's the best? What are you looking for to rank who as first and who as second?
And Sandra remembers actually the year she started thinking a lot about this. It was 2006. She was going back and forth to Cameroon in West Africa from her home in Canada.
Our laws in Canada made it that our cell phones were kind of crappy, but not only that, they were very expensive. And you would arrive in Cameroon and suddenly you would have a lady under an umbrella with seven cell phones, and people would just pay 25 cents to use them. And I was really impressed by the use of cell phones.
Think about this. This was 12 years ago, before smartphones. Cell phones, they were pretty expensive. And yet the poorest Cameroonian could rent a phone for a moment to make a call or send a message.
But I do know that the big debate was the ranking, because suddenly UN ranking decided that for a country to be digitally advanced, it didn't mean anymore to have access to digital technology, but to own it.
Now, Sandra wasn't quite sure why these rankings changed, whether maybe the cell phone companies were involved, but she says what happened next was pretty clear. African countries went from high in the rankings to back down low.
Africa loses again, you know, North American countries win, status quo, some people are happy, of course, most of the rest of the world isn't.
This kind of politics can make it into even the driest sounding ranking. For instance, take the World Bank's Ease of Doing Business Index. A few years ago, the country Chile dropped hard in those rankings from around 35 in the world to around 55. And then this month, the chief economist at the World Bank, Paul Romer, revealed that this slide downward wasn't because Chile suddenly became a harder place to do business. It was that the World Bank had tweaked the methodology in a way that punished Chile. And it punished it right after the country elected a socialist president. This was such a scandal that Paul Romer, who'd blown the whistle on this, ended up resigning 6 days later.
That just goes to show how hard it is to understand who rates in the first place the indexes that will be looked at.
Do you think one of them is here at Davos?
There are probably a lot of them here. If you're looking for the Illuminati, that's something else.
If I couldn't find the Illuminati, at least I could find some member of the indicator elite who must be here at Davos, right? Except that turned out to be not easy to do. I called the World Bank. Their senior staff were all booked up with meetings. Same thing with the UN. I almost gave up, and then I heard about a professor.
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
Somebody with a pitch-perfect Davos resume. She's a Rhodes Scholar, she's advised the IMF, she works here with the World Economic Forum, and she's a dean at Oxford. Professor Neri Woods agreed to give me a little bit of time.
Thanks for making this. They have me moderate more sessions than I should. And
we found a quiet corner, and I told her about this quest I had to meet someone who makes the indicators.
Are you them?
No, but...
Do you know them?
Actually, sorry, that's not true. I mean, I have input into different indicators.
In fact, she is in the middle of designing an important new indicator right now.
What would a government effectiveness indicator look like?
It's the government effectiveness indicator. She's doing it with Oxford. She's also consulted on other things like the UN Human Development Index.
Which I've been involved with in the past.
The Social Progress Index.
So I'm so glad I've achieved some of my mission. I met somebody who...
And while you'd think that all this work, fine-tuning the ranking of countries, would make her more of a believer in the power of data, it's actually done the opposite. She is a total indicator skeptic.
Countries vie here at Davos to move up that list. You know, I'm going to come top or I'm going to move up 2 points. And that shows that when I was Minister of the Economy, I really did great things. But actually, them reaching that indicator might just mean that they've passed a law. It might not mean that the law is being implemented or that it's being enforced or that it's actually changing anything on the ground.
Talking to Neri, I suddenly got this sinking feeling. Here I was, up here on the mountain, finally face to face with a member of the Davos elite, an indicator maker or advisor or whatever, and While down there in the rest of the world, you have countries and cities who are killing themselves to be first in the rankings. They're rankings that she apparently doesn't trust. But then the person I've met who helps measure the world tells me a secret.
It's actually not about the measurement of them.
It's not about the measurements. At this point, we were talking about how the United Nations has set all these ambitious goals for the year 2030, goals like end hunger and end poverty.
Now, if they'd just done that, everybody would have said it's hot air only. So now they've done a deeper exercise of saying, here are all the different things we should measure under each one to measure progress towards them.
For the next decade or more, till the year 2030, countries will be arguing about who ranks better in ending poverty, in ending hunger, and yeah, those numbers will definitely be fudged, and they'll probably have politics in them. But she says that without the numbers, without some kind of scorecard, it's hard to get us to collaborate on anything. So even if these rankings don't actually tell us our real score, they may at least encourage us to play the same game. After the break, I bring that message from the mountain down to the promenade.
Support for this NPR podcast and the following message come from Fundrise, an award-winning, first-of-its-kind real estate investment platform. Now you can unlock a world of investing that used to be reserved for only the most sophisticated investors. Learn more by visiting fundrise.com/NPR.
Friday morning, the final day of the conference, I came back down to the promenade to talk with Hassam from Saudi Arabia in his storefront. I gotta say, I was kind of nervous to tell him what I'd learned on the mountain, because remember, he and his team had spent all this time putting together an iPad app that had all of these hundreds of indicators and exactly where every country ranked. He'd come to Davos to present this thing, and what I'd heard from the people on the mountain was that they don't take these rankings all that seriously. But it turned out that Hassam had been hearing that line all week.
Spot on, and I'm very overwhelmed by this feedback. One indicator, no, we've been hearing this, is data is good, indicators are fine, but the discussions we can have.
But when you say spot on, I'm so surprised that you say that, because I thought you would say, no, this data is science.
Data is data. I just established that data will always have some biases, right?
After all his meetings at Davos, one thing Hassam wants to do is take this iPad app with all its thousands of graphs and charts and rankings of countries, and add a comment section so you could actually criticize the rank or the number you've been given. It's literally turning the number, the score, into the beginning of a conversation. And that's a lot more messy than his first version with all its clean lines. But maybe it's more the way the world works. We'd love to hear what you think of the show. Send us an email. We're at planetmoney@npr.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. We'll have a link to Saudi Arabia's measurement tool. It's called the International Performance Hub. You can find out where your country ranks. That's on our website, npr.org/money. Today's show was produced by Sally Helm. Our senior producer is Alex Goldmark, and Brian Erstadt edits the show. If you're looking for something else to listen to, I host a different podcast. It's called Rough Translation. We're hard at work on our second season. Our first season is out in the world. If you haven't heard it, go give it a listen. It has stories about how the things that we are talking about here in the United States, how they're playing out somewhere else in the world. It's called Rough Translation. You can find it wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gregory Warner. Thanks for listening.